Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I have a very special announcement for you. And that announcement is that it's time to get notified.
KUCI.
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 KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
I am very excited because our guest today has the same name as me, and that means that he is also a little king. And little kings become big kings, and big kings become, well, they just become kings. Ryan Williams, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Ryan, what's up? Thanks for having me.
Talk to us about where it all started. Were you born with the knack for influence? How did this all start? Did you grow up knowing that you would be an author, speaker, writer, influencer, all that?
Like any entrepreneur, I could tell you a story about a lemonade stand.
Yes.
But I'm not going to even go there.
Okay.
People could I feel like all of us could revise our history to say, oh, I knew at 5 years old when I was trading baseball cards that
yeah,
I'd be a business owner, and they're full of it. I actually was a stand-up comedian in my couple years after college, and was living in Washington, D.C. on the East Coast, and had a penchant to perform. I peaked at the improv and ran a lot of open mics around the D.C. metro area. And at the time, I was actually struggling with clinical depression, and I really struggled to breathe and, you know, get out of my apartment. I had a lot of beer cans just straddled on my desk with comedy note cards. My linens were all over the floor, you know, hadn't made my bed for weeks on end, and my dishes were stacked all over the kitchen, you know, up to the ceiling, and I had very little wherewithal. And comedy, I say that was my jumping out of an airplane moment, where everyone sort of, you know, when they're going through a prolonged funk of depression, it's good to really test yourself in a way that's, you know, making yourself feel, and that's what comedy did for me. And I realized after performing 50 times and watching 300 shows at the DC Improv that I was much better behind the scenes as a marketer, and I was much better at programming comedy festivals rather than being the star.
Okay.
And that's really where a lot of this began, and it's amazing because in the modern economy, in the new digital age, when we grow influence, that many of our past, even failings, that are these disparate pieces, like my stand-up comedy career, help us when they come full circle. And now that I'm a public speaker and all that experience of doing comedy, you could say it was a failure, right? Because I don't have a Comedy Central special. I'm not on Netflix. You know, I didn't go on tour with Dave Chappelle.
Right.
But now it comes all full circle because I'm able to utilize that experience to really progress my life moving forward.
And I think that's an interesting story because it's sort of like a reverse lemonade stand, right? You said you weren't going to do the lemonade stand, and it was the exact opposite. It was somebody who's dealing with your own issues, trying to be funny, and from actually going out there and cutting your teeth on stage, you realize where your strengths were, you end up behind the scenes, and you're able to still be involved in that system. I think it's a nice larger note that you don't have to be on stage to be involved. And I think that it's an interesting topic around the influence and influencers because, I don't know, do you think you have to be on stage to have influence these days?
Definitely not. And, you know, that's really what the comedy experience allowed me to see was you could be behind the scenes and be even more influential in some ways than being on stage with a microphone. And the value of the comedy experience really came down to the open mic nights. And that's where I think a lot of people struggle is they don't hone their craft, they don't practice. And so when you're doing comedy, you do open mic nights from Chris Rock to Jerry Seinfeld to whomever, Dave Chappelle. They're going around practicing their material and going in, doing 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, and doing it in front of crowds at like dive bars, you know. And they're doing their set ahead of time because they need to perfect it and execute really well when they do get that Netflix special. And I feel like that was something that I really felt like, you know, getting your reps in, practicing, honing your craft, there's no better time to do that than right now. And, you know, you don't have to do that even on the main stage. You can do that on the side stage. And so I feel like, you know, using the stage as a metaphor is powerful because so many things go on, but it's not about just performing at the improv. It's all about these other elements where you can influence and really make things happen.
And describe what influence is, really, because I think it's a word that's thrown around. And we have this thing on the show that I call the GTO. It is the grandma timeout or the grandpa timeout, depending on, you know, who you want to talk to. So if you were to explain what influence means in the modern day age of social media and whatever you want to call it, how would you explain that to your grandma or grandpa?
Well, Grandma Ginger, what I would say is...
Wait a minute. I forgot. You are also a ginger, and we're kindred spirits, because we're both, yes, like, part-time rappers. Sometimes we think we're funny. We're on stage, off stage, and, yeah, so Ginger Pride. It's National Teacher Appreciation.
For all you Canadian listeners.
Yeah. Ginger Strong.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said Ginger Strong. I wanted to give a special shout-out to all the teachers who are gingers. You know, I just want to spread the love.
Yeah, totally. I actually, if I was running for office, I would just run on the platform, I'm going to give teachers raises. I think that would be, like, the best way to win an election. You're like, I'm going to give teachers raises. And then you're like, what, you don't want teachers to get raises?
and then somebody would say, well, you need to have influence to do that. And then you're talking with grandma or grandpa. Sorry for the distraction of the gingerness.
Yeah,
I got excited.
And, it's really important to understand this, because influence is different than influencer. And I hate the word influencer. I despise it. And you would think that's a surprise, since I wrote a book titled The Influencer Economy. However, the word influencer has changed. And it's really, the stereotype is that it's someone on Twitter with a bunch of followers that tweets out products to get paid. And that is not true influence. Influence is, Seth Godin, the great author, he defined, when you think about leadership, that leadership is defined through a shared vision, a leader, and a community of people. And then he defines that, you know, more deeply as a tribe. And I believe that's very good in the context of influence. But the third piece, I would say, outside of a leader, outside of a community, is collaboration. And when I think about influence, it's how much you can collaborate with other people to grow your opportunities, your profile, your business, or anything. And the more you collaborate, like something like this, right, where we're jamming and talking to each other, the more opportunities you have to grow your influence. And if I did a study, on, you know, true influence with people on YouTube that have big followings, and I found that, like, if you put influence on a straight line and, you know, go work with me, people, but this is a visual. I know you can't see me, but on one end is no influence, and on the other end is a lot of influence. The more you collaborate, what I call radical collaboration, the more you work with others, the more you open up audiences, opportunities, networks for people, the more you actually grow your influence.
Interesting. So do you have an influence equation or some way to put a barometer on it and have some sort of measurement? I mean, because it sounds like there's a measurement to this. Are there different degrees of influence? And how do you calculate that? Because it seems like it's a catch-all word where you can't be like a half influencer just by the sake of the word. It's like you are or you are not. Help me understand where the lines in the sand are.
Well, we can start by saying what it's not. An influence is not defined by vanity metrics, like followers, for example. You can't say, oh, that guy has influence or that lady has influence because they have a million followers on Twitter. Like, that's a vanity metric. You also can't define it by likes. You can't go to someone's Facebook page and say, oh, they have a million likes. They must have influence. Because you could have bought the likes. You know, you could have a Ukrainian farm of hackers who bought the likes. And, you know, so likes are a vanity metric. And it's also not impressions. People that work in advertising know that impressions are, you know, something that you get on your website, but it's not necessarily clicks or conversions or purchases. And so it's not these vanity metrics. I think a lot of people get that wrong. And so, you know, demystifying really what influence is, it often isn't even necessarily equated with social media. And that's where we are right now in the digital age. But a lot of people I know that have influence have an amazing Rolodex of people, and they can make an introduction to you in 2 minutes and change your whole perspective on your business or life. But they have no social media presence. So I think, you know, for starters, you know, it's like defining what it isn't. And it's not all these vanity metrics. And I truly believe, you know, your network is your net worth, and people you have in your contact list is really the value. And also, like, who listens to you? There's a really good writer named Eric Barker, and he's like a Mythbusters for a lot of conventional science wisdom. And he was telling me that when you think about, how to reach people, like, it's not necessarily who knows you. I'm sorry, it's not who you know, right? Like, there's a whole misnomer right now that it's all, you got to network, you got to know a bunch of people. It's not necessarily who you know. It's who knows you. Because Jay-Z doesn't know me, but I know him, right? He has true influence. And so I think people need to think more about, like, how they're perceived, who they can connect with, and who they can collaborate with, and help others, really, at the end of the day, to fix their problems. And that's where, a lot of influence begins.
I like that you brought it back to the problem, right? You're sort of demystifying the influencer as the person who is just tweeting out products to get paid. I mean, technically, they have influence if people are buying products off of that. But you're looking for a more robust definition that is really rooted in, if there's a problem that needs to be solved, how is somebody solving it? And the important part is, who knows that that person is the person to go to solve it? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, exactly. The words I use are pain points. You have to solve pain points for people. And are you married?
No, but I've been with my lovely lady for like 10 years and engaged, 4 or 5 years ago and whatnot. So we're connected.
You're connected. So in most marriages or long commitments, you have an in-law, right? I have a father-in-law, for example.
Right.
And he lives in North Carolina, and he has no idea what I do for a living.
Okay.
He's actually very suspect of it. And
well, wait, what do you do?
Yeah, and he's like, wait a second. And, I live in Southern California like you do, and I've been a part of startups that have been acquired by Disney and Warner Brothers, and they have raised, $14 million to $100 million in capital and fundraising from, wealthy investors. And he doesn't understand the valuations and how these companies are worth so much when they're all like internet properties and their YouTube networks and their websites. And so we talked about influence, and he's sitting at my kitchen table and very, very much like suspecting, like, what are you asking me, Ryan? Because leave me alone. I don't want to talk about your vaporware that you're selling. And I asked about influence, and he was saying, he's a boiler repair operator. So he's a company in Raleigh, North Carolina. And they solve pain points for people. And so I asked him, how do you grow influence? And he said that you solve pain points and you give something that they can't get anywhere else.
Ooh, I kind of like that.
And you become focused on that.
Wait a minute. You give somebody something that somebody else can't give.
That someone else can't give. And that person, hopefully this conversation, you can't get anywhere else.
Right.
With me.
Two gingers named Ryan. This is a rarity. It's very hard to find. the radio waves are sprouting
radio
freckles
are
everywhere
right now. Actually, and then the next piece is that he said that you give people something that is just enough to make them dangerous. And so, for an example, is someone calls him up and they say, "Hey, I'm in Atlanta. My boiler isn't working for my business," and my father-in-law spends like 30, 40 minutes is giving them advice, right? Because that's what you do. You got to generate opportunities and help people. But he gives them just enough to be dangerous, but not enough to actually fix the boiler. So then they'll call him up like the next day and say, "Hey, actually, can we hire you?" And I think that's a very great mantra for people to think about this online or offline, because not everyone is involved in the digital economy. And many people still do have more traditional businesses and networks and opportunities for themselves.
This is an interesting topic here because this is visited often when it comes to content creation and content marketing. There's maybe two schools of thought. One is, don't give away all of your golden nuggets so that people hire you for it. Then the other is, give away everything because you know that even though they're armed with the information, they're still not going to know how to turn the wrench or do the boiler a certain way. And I prefer the latter, to where I'll give away all the information I can all day long, just totally for free, which helps me to become top of mind for what my expertise is. And then if somebody wants it to actually happen, they can try it themselves and they can see how difficult it is. And then I will be top of mind to come back when they actually need the help to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that second strategy works really well for people. And my belief is that you need to be relevant. And that's where giving out information or anything for free or being helpful helps you, because when you are top of mind, to, you know, use that term again, is when people think of you as a go-to person for whatever the problem they have. And yeah, I think my father-in-law's point, what I liked about it was that he's thinking more about like growing a platform or helping others, generating sales. And he's so specialized that, you know, he doesn't have a blog. He doesn't use anything online. He knows how to use Google. And that's where I think that a lot of people, they get confused because they're thinking like, oh, I need to have a million followers, or I need to like collaborate with someone with a big Instagram following, because that's the only way my product can launch. And so much of this is a mindset versus just, you know, embracing social media.
All right, I love all of this metaphysical, psychological explanation. Grandma, her brain is just on fire right now, right? But let's talk about how people can, well, what are the steps, right? Do you have to identify what your influence is before you become an influencer? And then once you decide what you want to have influence in, how do you leverage the tools around to grow that influence? I mean, if we're going to take somebody, let's pretend like we're turning grandma into an influencer, all right?
Right.
What are some of those foundational steps? If somebody's listening, they're like, okay, I want to become an influencer, not the person that just tweets a bunch to get paid, but I want to have true impact, and I want to solve people's problems, and I want to make them dangerous enough to fix the problem on their own. But if they can't, they'll come back to me, and I'll feel good about helping them. How does that all start?
Well, for Grandma Ginger, and let's say she's in Des Moines, Iowa, where I grew up, and she's... What's an activity that Grandma Ginger would be doing? We can make this as real as possible.
Yeah, well, let's think. Let's think about people who are online. Let's see, what does Grandma want to help with? Does she want to be a relationship coach, or does she want to be a strength coach, or does she want to be probably not a personal trainer? Well, she could be a personal trainer. Let's do this. Personal trainers for other elderly people. How about that?
Okay. So, yeah, that's great. She's trying to help other people get buff.
Yeah, or not fall apart, right? I mean, like, as you get older, it's not about being buff as much as just holding things together.
She wants to maintain.
Yeah, she wants to help. She wants to help people maintain where they're at and sort of increase their wellness of living based on the fact that if they're healthier, they might be happier. And so that's what her passion is.
So the framework that I've created in the book is three steps to help grow your influence. And the first step really is launch, the second one is collaborate, and the third one is thrive. And I would work her through the framework and say, okay, step number one, launch. So you have to launch your story. Like, you really need to figure out what your story is, what you're focusing on. And if she's a trainer in Des Moines, Iowa, she's on the west side, what kind of network does she have? You know, you have to think about how you can reach people. But when you launch that story, it's like thinking about, how, like, what's the big vision for her? Like, what does she want to do in 3 years? Does she want to have clients all over the Midwest? Does she want to have only a neighborhood business? Does she just want to use this to stay relevant and make a little side money because she's retired?
Yeah.
And so once you have a big vision, you have to be bold, right? You have to be very bold and figure out what's her platform? You know, what's the channel? How is Grandma going to communicate with people? Is she going to cold call people? Is she going to go to her church and find other friends that she can you know, be employed to solve their problems? Or is she going to just use social media, for example? You know, she needs to use Instagram to do ads. Like, there's so many ways to pick a platform. So the first thing is, like, launching that story. And you find that story by looking at your big vision. What is it? Where do you want to be in a couple years, 3 years from now? Think about your platform. How do you reach people, right? And then that segues into the second step, which is all about the collaboration. And that's, you know, as we talked about how true influence grows. And so who can game change for her? Like, who can really supercharge her business? Can she go to her church and talk to one of the leaders in the church community and say, hey, I have this thing, and I'm doing an offer, and can she give people perks, right? Can she really think about this? I always recommend to look at this like a crowdfunding campaign where you have perks, or any sort of American Express, any sort of rewards program, and think about what rewards can I give people. And so I would recommend Grandma and go to one of her communities and say, I want to collaborate. I'm going to launch this next phase. Talk to a leader where at the Y, at the church, in her homeowners association, wherever it is, and say, I have this new program. I'm going to give it at a discount. I'm piloting it with you all. And I want to grow people's fitness to make them feel maintained. Collaborate with people. to grow, draft off other people's influence, start getting your customer base. Then the third step, you know, is thinking about how to thrive. And thriving really is, you know, at that point where you're scaling your business, you're scaling your opportunities, you're giving back to people. And the true, of all the people I've interviewed for the book, from best-selling authors like Adam Grant to Seth Godin to James Altucher, 99% of these people were givers. They gave to others. And Adam Grant's book, Give and Take, have you read that before?
No, I haven't, but I probably will now. Adam Grant, what is it?
Adam Grant, Give and Take. Yeah, he does okay. He has a whole paradigm about our personality types where we're either givers, we're takers, or we're matchers. And so he has done the research to show that givers, people that stay late at work, they mentor other people, they do a lot of stuff that doesn't show up in the stat sheet. They often fail because they burn out, they get taken advantage of, or they succeed. It's one or the other, right? They're very successful, the most successful, or they fail the most. And most of us are matchers. So you help me, I help you. It's very transactional. It's survival, right? It's I help you, you help me in return. And then there's the takers. We all know those people. We try to weed them out of our life, but we realize we have to work with them because they're around. So you want to surround yourself with takers, or not with takers, but with matchers and givers, right? So matchers and givers. And when you give with purpose, that's the best way. Adam's research, you know, as a Wharton professor at University of Pennsylvania, said that giving with purpose is what counts. And so the third step, you know, when you're thriving, you're scaling, you're growing this consulting business to help people get fit, you know, over the age of 65, it's how can you help others? How can you grow your network? How can you make connections on behalf of other people? Can you find underserved communities? Especially when we're in the new economy, like so much social impact is embedded into companies and operations. And so is there a way for you to think about, like for me, you know, I focus 10% of my work on mental health because I've been through depression, right? So can grandma think about something that's very potentially personal for her to incorporate her business? That's it's a community I write about in the book. This woman, Hannah Hart, who's a big YouTuber, she has a show called My Drunk Kitchen. It's now on Food Network, and it used to be on YouTube. And she's an incredible person. She, you know, gives back to her community and does for homeless shelters. She helps do fundraising drives and can drop offs. And I think that, you know, that giving with purpose matters at the end of the day. And ultimately, you know, once you start scaling the business and you start making more money, all this happens, grandma starts thriving. And she's going to look back and think, wow, this changed my life because I listened to the two gingers on public radio, and now I have a thriving, amazing business.
It is that simple. You hear that, grandma? Well, do you see how somebody like grandma maybe hears that and then is a bit intimidated by it? What do you think about the third party, non-objective view of people who hear that? They literally listen to it and then they're like,
yeah, I mean, it's daunting. This is all daunting. I mean, getting up every day and putting on your shoes and going to work is daunting. And it comes down to what you want in life, and do you want to have purpose, or do you want to just keep doing what you're doing? And a lot of us, I think, get trained to be down a track where we either, you know, need to make a lot of money, or we're barely getting by, or somewhere in between is most of us. And I think, you know, if you follow the steps, like based on the people I've interviewed, all these world-class YouTubers and podcasters and, you know, self-published authors that have gone to the New York Times list, like there's so much more purpose that you get when you think about, you know, how do I collaborate, help other people solve problems? And it sounds very grandiose, like, oh, we're just here, you know, and we don't need to worry about money. Of course you worry about money. But I think we're reaching a point now where grandma needs to decide if she want to be fulfilled or not, and it does take a commitment, and it's not going to happen overnight. Like a lot of these influencers I've researched, it takes years. I mean, it's a long grind, and some people may never even make a career out of what they're doing. They just, maybe it's a side income, or maybe it just makes them feel better.
And what's interesting about the way that we often talk about this is we'll say one thing, and then we'll say, or it's this, and then we'll say, and it's that, and then we'll say, but then you got to consider this, and then there's that. And it's like, I'm almost imagining it's like a conjunctive sandwich, right? It's like, how do we tag all these things in? Because it's simple to say, well, to grow your influence, it's, you know, it's launch, collaborate, and thrive. But then when you get into the details, like, all right, well, let's talk about a launch. First, you need to find your platform, and you need to find this, and with, and it's like this conjunction sandwich, right? So how do people work past or work through that conjunction sandwich? Because I feel a lot of people, if the conjunction sandwich is too big, they look at it and they're like, I can't eat that. So is there any trick to breaking things down into small steps? And you're talking about a process that could take years. But I'm afraid grandma is gonna fall off of the wagon. Not like literally, like she's healthy, right? She's a fitness girl, so she's good. But how do you deal with the motivation side of this? Because one thing is tactical. We can tell people what to do. It's very simple. You launch, you collaborate, and you thrive. But what about the component of motivation? How do you get motivated to continue to tie your influencer shoes in a way that actually doesn't suck all of the energy and lifeblood out of you? Do you have any advice for people that, you know, let's tactics aside, because I'm holding your book right now, because we met at the Ken Rutowski's metal thing a long time ago, and I've got your book, and let's see, did you sign it? Oh, yeah. You said, Ryan, you know these influencer steps. Oh, you put the, look at this. One, launch. Two, collaborate. Three, thrive. You're the LK Media influencer. Looking forward to collaborating. Hey, look at this. Now we're collaborating. Pretty cool, right?
But yeah, you put it out in the universe.
Put it out there. So how do you help people on the motivational side of growing their influence, assuming that they've got the technical skills or they can read your book or they can do whatever?
Well, everyone has this inside of them in one way or another. And there's three personality types that I recommend people look inward to figure out where they fit. And at any stage in your life, you're either a double downer, a pivoter, or a segwayer. And breaking it down simply is a double downer. It's like a poker term, double down. That means what you're doing, you really are thriving, and you want to invest more in that specific thing because it's succeeding, right? And that's where maybe grandma, if she's launching a whole new business for fitness, she's not a double downer, right? Because she's doing something new. And so launching a whole new thing from scratch is impossible. It's very hard. It's daunting. At that point, she's a pivoter, right? So she's going maybe from one thing to another. And even like great tech products like Twitter, for example, wasn't Twitter at first. It was a podcast app. Instagram pivoted from a location app on your iPhone to then a photo sharing app with filters, right? So many great ideas have pivoted. And so grandma, in this case, is a pivoter, and that's the hardest challenge, right? Where most of us thrive is when we become a segwayer. I'm not talking about the people driving those awful motorized machines.
That defy gravity.
That were big 10 years ago. I'm saying that you're a segwayer, meaning you have a lot of people, and that's where I talk about your story. In that launch step, your story is so important because I work with clients and they want to do something completely new and they're like, I'm going to become an author. I want to be known as an author. And you're undervaluing your own experiences because if you're an author, like the reason why I wrote my book wasn't because I did all the research. I mean, that was obviously a huge part of it, but it's because I've worked at Disney and I've worked at startups and I've been part of acquisitions and I know social media marketing from experience for back before when MySpace was big. And so that's a segue. And so when you think about this mentally, I always recommend you identify double downer, pivoter, or if you're a segwayer. And really, if pivoting takes a lot more work, so if you can segue into something, that's a lot better. So let's say grandma has actually been working at the same gym for 10 years, and she has a community. I mean, community is so important. And she actually invests in the community. She's active at the Y. She's running 5Ks for majority of her life, and she has a big network of potential clients. She's already got that community involved, and that's where segueing the opportunity makes it a lot easier. And so it's less about reinventing yourself in a brand new way. It's more about repositioning yourself.
Okay, the segwayer-ness I was getting a little bit lost with, but that last thing that you said I think resonated with me, and it's not creating something. So creating something new is this, I'm losing the terms here.
Pivoting.
Okay. So pivoting. So you're doing something completely different. And then you've got the double downer, which is you're already doing something well and you're just double downing on it. And then the segwayer, the last thing you said resonated with me as far as it's I forgot what you said now.
Well, it's more of like, so many of us want to reinvent ourselves, right? And we're all constantly evolving in our careers, in our lives, in rapid ways that weren't attainable 15 years ago because of technologies. And like, you could be an Uber or Lyft driver tomorrow, and it blows my mind you could just do that and make a third income potentially, or a second income for yourself. And so all of us are reinventing ourselves, and that's also a trap because we're so hell-bent, can I say that word, on reinventing ourselves.
It's not vulgar.
We lose ourselves. We lose ourselves. And I believe I used the word repositioning could be a better way to say it, or how to reassess ourselves, where we're leveraging all of our strengths and our talents and our experiences. So we're not just ripping things up and starting from scratch. We're just moving things over from left to right rather than like up and down, where it's really, I don't know, that's where the daunting thing comes in, where like reinvention is scary. And so you have to take it in smaller steps, like you're saying, because we don't want to just suddenly be overwhelmed and give up because we're stuck and we don't grow our influence in the way that we think is meaningful.
But I guess what's the difference between a pivoter and a segwayer? Because they sound a bit similar, where you're doing one thing and they sort of pivot to something else. I guess that's like a complete change from what you're doing. Whereas the segwayer is basically taking your own strengths and then segwaying into a pivot, I guess?
Well, it's just segwaying into something new. So like for me, like doing public speaking for my way of work is not a pivot. Like, I'm not just reinventing something from scratch. I did stand-up comedy. I've done, 50 gigs. I've seen 300 comedy shows, and I understand audiences, I think, reasonably well. And so I've segued my career in a way that it makes a lot of sense versus, like, okay, I got to public speak. I got to start from scratch. I hate my job as a marketing executive, and I want to do something completely different. And that's where the pivoting is like a complete 180, where segueing is more of like a 60-degree turn, because you're actually less reinventing yourself and more just leveraging everything you've done to come more full circle.
Okay, I'm thinking of it being like a piggybacking. So you're hiking and whatnot, and you've already got a fanny pack, and you turn that into a backpack. You're still moving in the same direction, up the same hill. You're just utilizing what you have and maybe repositioning it in a way that's not a total pivot. It's not, people are going to be like, oh, whoa, what is he doing now? No, they're saying, oh, this is a natural extension of what he has done.
Right. Yeah, there's a community involved, and you're not starting from scratch. Like, grandma, if she just was like, I want to do weight fitness training, and she's not fit, for example.
Right.
if she's not fit and she doesn't even know how to work out, and she's got to train herself and then figure out how to, launch her idea and build her business, she's in trouble.
Right. Okay.
But if she's fit, she's done 5Ks, she's in a running group, she has a potential client base already in her network, that's a natural segue. She's not doing a complete 180 where people are like, wait, what are you doing again? You haven't worked out in 10 years.
Gotcha. Okay, so the double downer is using what you've already been doing and just reinvesting in that.
Yes.
The pivoter is frustrated with your current track and literally jumping tracks. You're frogging across the street to somewhere completely new.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, and then your segwayer is you are still on the same road, you've just moved across the street to the other side so that you're in the shade because you forgot your sunscreen, and you're still in the same direction. You're just taking advantage of the situational opportunities to progress in a new side of the sidewalk, but in the same direction.
Yes, and then you find a way to put the sunscreen on.
Yeah, on a segue, so that you can do it like... Well, this is cool. Now, I know you got to jump, but what would be your closing motivational thoughts in maybe a minute or two to convince somebody who is a problem solver? They have pain points that they solve, but they're intimidated by the social media. They don't want to put themselves out there, but they want to help people. And there's this classic challenge. I want to help more people, but I don't want to be seen as an influencer. How would you talk somebody like that off the fence to get in the mental spot to get ready to launch Collaborate and Thrive?
Yeah, I always look back at my comedy experience for insights, because many of you listening don't know this, but when a comedian's on stage, they have a drink in their hand, and they have a little cocktail napkin. They usually have their set list written down.
On the cocktail napkin?
On the cocktail napkin. And so when you forget where you're going, you look at the set list, like, oh, I got to tell that joke now. I'm going to tell the joke about the dogs, right?
Right.
And then, oh, I got the cat joke next. Okay, that's good. So you're back, right? And I believe everyone needs to make a framework and rehearse, where you know you're set inside and out. And a lot of people get stage fright because they don't know how to perform comedy. And that's the same with taking on a new challenge or an opportunity in business or life, because you want to feel confident. And the more you practice, the more you get your story down, your presentation, your pitch, whatever it is, don't freestyle. Don't make up things on the fly. Stick to your steps and think about launching, collaborating, and thriving. That's three, right? I mean, I have a framework that's always my foundation for when I talk about my book. And then I can freelance on whatever I want. But I feel like the more people rehearse, practice, and prepare, then they can get the confidence where they feel like I work with a lot of clients that they feel like they don't have a story to tell, or they feel like they're not an expert, and they have some sort of, we all suffer through imposter syndrome, like we don't belong. And I find that preparing, rehearsing, and creating a framework for you to do well and perform is actually the best way, because that's why comedians have their set list on that cocktail napkin when they're on stage, because even though they look spontaneous and witty and off the cuff, they've rehearsed their set countless times that you'd be surprised. Someone's done the same joke 100 times. They know it's funny because they've done it so, you know, inside and out.
And that's an interesting point, you know, that you can do something 100,000 times, but it's got to be fresh. And if you were going to, you know, I think people might think, if I have the same message over and over and over and over and over and over, people are going to get sick of it. But it's new for the people that it's new to. And I like this concept of using the comedian's cocktail napkin concept, which is to rehearse, practice, and share, but have it readily available so that when you get unmotivated or you don't know what to do, you have a plan. You have some sort of treasure map to go to at the end of the day.
Yeah, treasure map's a great way to think about it, totally.
I like it. An influencer treasure map.
And then you realize that, like, that's what motivates you, gets you going. And then if you screw up, which we all do, I mean, I know you're close to perfect.
Yeah, well, gingers are. It's in our blood. Freckles are an indication of...
But then if you screw up and you make mistakes, then you can go back and say, oh, well, I know what I'm doing. I've done this before. I have a framework. And you gain your confidence again, and you get rattled, and you rally from it. And then those moments of actually getting rattled can be turned into something that's authentic and real, and people get to know you better because they respect the fact that you have a process.
I dig it. Well, hey, this is a lot of fun. I think that we need to keep this collaboration going. Us gingers need to stick together, especially with the fact that we're both little kings and we're on our way to these bigger influence to solve major pain points of people so we can make them dangerous, but not dangerous enough to do it themselves. Actually, I like the fact that we make them dangerous enough to do it themselves, but then they realize that it is dangerous and that's where they need help.
100% agree.
Cool, because we don't want to set people up for failure and say, I'm going to give you all the stuff except for clue number 9. I'm going to give you every single piece of the treasure map except for the last piece. It's like, give it to them all and then be like, be wary of this, and then you're going to lose motivation here, and then you're going to need a special tool here. I'm just going to tell you, start going to get this stuff, and then make them dangerous enough to do it themselves, but they will naturally find out the danger in it, and whether it's an outside force or inside force, and that's where you can be that person who's positioned to help them through those pain points to get to that end goal.
And totally, guiding them along in the journey.
I dig it. Yeah. For all the boilers that are broken, or for all the older ladies and gentlemen who need a workout and a fitness coach, or for somebody who just needs to get more eyeballs on their game-changing or world-changing technology or system or speech or whatever it may be. Well, Ryan, this has been a lot of fun. So if people want to check out this book and you, where do they go? You get one website plug.
Yeah, they can go to influencereconomy.com, my website. They can find the book on Amazon as well. And if they go to my website, they can get a free 99 question and answer action list for how to launch, collaborate, and thrive in the new economy at influencereconomy.com.
Awesome. All right, Ryan, I'm going to let you go. This has been a pleasure, and we'll definitely have you back. Maybe we can do an extension of this, because the more people we can help grow their influence, the more pain points that are solved, and the world can be a better place.
100%. Thank you, my friend.
All right,
talk to you later.
Ginger Pride, buddy. We'll see you soon.
Later. Bye.
All right. Adios. Well, that was fun. I had a lot of insights there, and it's this topic of influencer and influencer economy. It somewhat is out there as a pejorative term or a negative, but it's really not if you look at the way that Ryan has really positioned it here. So here's the deal. I'm going to put on one of these fund drive promotional PSAs so you can listen and get inspired. And then all you have to do is call in 949-824-5824. My show, I believe, we're approaching the 100 show mark. And like I said earlier, I'm not in this for the income. I'm in this for the outcome. And I really hope that the information and these experts that we bring on and the fun, lighthearted conversation about something as serious as communicating who you are and what you do and the problems that you solve, I believe that's worthwhile. So if you want to throw 10 bucks at it or 20 bucks at it, there's all kinds of cool prizes and gifts that you can get, whether it's cups or t-shirts or thumb drives. You know, you can rep the KUCI brand out there. And show us some love today and this week on the social platforms. If you share that you have given, it'll help more people to give. That's on Twitter. It's going to be at KUCIFM. On Instagram, it's going to be at KUCIFM. And we're on Facebook as well, and that's KUCI 889. All right, listen to this, and then I'm going to come back with a recap of what we talked about to sum it all up for you. And let's listen to Cynthia, a former KUCI DJ.
Hi there, my name is Cynthia, and I first started working for KUCI in the mid-90s. I was with the station from 1995 until 1999. At first, it was a way for me to get involved in something totally different from school. What I found was a dedicated community of volunteers who were passionate about bringing you, the listening community, all the best in music from every genre you can imagine, and then some. Not to mention intriguing informational programming on local and global issues. This community quickly drew me in, and I fed off their passion. I wanted to be a part of the team bringing KUCI to you. I know that my years as a DJ and volunteer for KUCI gave me more than I could ever give them, so I'm back to ask you to support the programming you hear on KUCI every day. Music and ideas that you may not otherwise get to hear, not to mention a wide array of anteater sports. Your support helps to keep KUCI on the air year after year. In the age of budget cuts to educational institutions, a service like KUCI, Orange County's only independent radio station, is truly an endangered species. Please help by donating today and keep KUCI on the air for many years to come.
All right, well, that was nice. So we are going to recap what we talked about today with Ryan Williams on the Get Notified show. So let's rock here. We are going to talk about this thing called the influencer economy. Now, if you haven't heard of the influencer economy, it is the economy of influencers. And really, what do you think the word influencer means? I talked with Ryan Williams today on my radio show KUCI called Get Notified. And I had met him maybe about a year ago, and we've connected, one, because our names are Ryan, and two, because he's a ginger like me, so of course we're going to get along. And we just spent about 45 minutes going through the ins and outs of what influencer economy means. So I'm going to sum it up here in a few minutes, and we'll basically get the breakdown. I like the concept that he talked about, really your brand and your influence is not about how many people you know, but it's more about how many people know you. And the example he gave was with Jay-Z. He said, look, Jay-Z doesn't know who I am, but I know who Jay-Z is. And this idea of influence isn't just sending a bunch of tweets and getting a bunch of products sold. It's really a matter of finding pain points of people who you can help to solve, and then them knowing that you're the person that can help solve them. So in his whole book, he outlines a three-step process. Basically, the first is to launch, the second is to collaborate, and the third is to thrive. So let's riff on these just for a little bit here. When it comes to launching, the idea is that you have to figure out what it is that you're going to launch. And he went into a further discussion about three types of personalities. And I think it's important to understand these three types of personalities to understand where you are and your ability to launch. The first one he talked about was a pivoter. And he used an example of Twitter. Did you know that Twitter started off really as a podcast app? and then it ended up turning into Twitter. That's a pivot. That's from one spot to the other. And when we think about our expertise and what we want to have influence on, sometimes people are pivoters and they might be in one profession and then just decide to totally pivot and go somewhere else. That is a lot. There's a lot of challenges when it comes to that. When you're trying to launch, if you are known for one thing and then launch with something completely different, you're up to an uphill battle. The second type of personality he talked was a double downer. Now, it's not like a Debbie Downer. It's more of a poker reference. And the idea is that if you're really doing well at something and you enjoy it and that's your expertise, if you double down on it, that's a way to launch, right? If you're already known as the guy who does X, Y, Z, then why don't you just double down on that and try to create your influence around X, Y, Z? And the third was a segwayer. And I think this is an interesting concept because a segwayer, not the little funky things with the two wheels that you're riding on, but a segue, right? Imagine that if a pivoter is you on one road and then completely changing freeways in a new direction, then the double downer is somebody who's on the same road and then actually, you know, goes in a narrower and narrower road, and that's the only road that they're going to be on. They'll never exit. The segwayer is somebody who maybe is on in the left-hand lane and then goes to the middle lane and goes to the right lane and then comes back to the left-hand lane. And you're really using the strengths that you have to basically double down on what you're good at to get better at. So within those three things, he talks about launching, because you can't start or grow influence without launching. In order to launch, you've got to know your story, you've got to know the big vision, and you've got to know the platform or platforms that you want to share it with. And you can reverse engineer that by trying to figure out the problem that you're solving and then make sure that you are on the platforms communicating the problem that you solve to those people. The second part of his influencer strategy is to collaborate. And I think this is a great concept that's not talked about enough. When you collaborate, you're using your existing tribes and you're using the existing influence that others have around you to draft on it so that you can build upon that expertise. Then the third thing he talks about is thriving, and this is where you're really scaling your business, and this is where you're giving back. This is where the rubber meets the road, essentially. And what that means is that you are taking this collaborative environment with the launch and the direction that you've decided to go on, and then that's where you actually start to make things happen. So those are Ryan's three steps in building an influencer economy. And it's not just trying to sell products by influence. It's trying to use your experience to help people so that they can solve the pain points and the problems that they have. All right, that's it for this little insight. And I am going to sign off here and hand it over to none other than the wonderful writers from around the world who basically are brought to the show. How many years have you guys been going on?
20 years this month.
Crazy. So talk about making impact and influence on the community. You know, Writers on Writing is a great example of a show that is essentially funded by you, the listeners. And this is Fund Week. So if you enjoy the fun, get out your checkbook, get out your PayPal, get out whatever it is, and basically see if you can donate. So we're going to end with another story here and see if you can give back today and make sure you share that you're giving back. Ladies and gentlemen, I've had a fun time with you today talking about influence, and we will see you soon.